Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
This hour is sponsored by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Affordable implants, life-changing smiles.
The talent that's here and the talent that is continuing to develop here. We obviously have some mainstay guys like Ian Happ.
Ian Happ, Cubs all-star outfielder.
Ian Happ, 23 bombs on the year and hits one right on a button over to left fielder's head and one hops into the ivy. Sheets did not think he hit it that hard and it went right over his head. Two-out double for Ian Happ, and that is as hard a ball as he's hit in the series.
Gold Glove Award winner.
The Cubs have won the ball game. They have won the National League Wild Card Series battle against San Diego. Not surprisingly, it went right down to the final at-bat.
Host of the Compound Podcast.
We got playoff baseball. We got end of the year. Where do you want to start?
Connect Roasters coffee enthusiast.
Here's a man that probably has five fresh pots a day.
Ian Happ on 670 The Score.
We toast you, Ian Happ.
Something tells me that there was a lot of toasting with Ian Happ yesterday. This is Rahimi Harrison Grody on 670 The Score. And we are happy to have our weekly visit with Ian Happ. And it's just a little late because, well, they had a playoff series to win. Ian, of course, the Gold Glove left fielder that was shown yesterday. And he also, of course, hosts the Compound Podcast, which you can hear through Odyssey and the Odyssey app. And he joins us via the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. So download that Circa app today. Ian, how are you today?
I am good. It was a fun night last night. Awesome atmosphere at Wrigley the last 3 days. And nice to have a day off today. But yeah, it was pretty good last night.
I'm so curious as to the celebration last night versus what we saw in Pittsburgh. It seemed like more of the alcohol that was shared was ending up on people and on the floor than actually being ingested. Is that an accurate portrayal of what happened last night?
There was some ingested. I think the difference between, you know, when you clinch, go into the playoffs, it's kind of a celebration of the season, celebration of the long grind. And when you win a playoff series, it's
oh no, did we lose Ian?
Uh-oh.
The Cylons have taken Ian.
There he goes.
Poor guy. I hope he's okay.
I know, and here he is joining us after what sounded like a pretty good evening.
Yeah.
I guess a little bit more happened than what we just saw in the post-game show.
Sounded like he could use a handful of Connect Roaster beans.
Yeah, know? Ian, yeah. You drinking any Connect coffee this morning?
Man. I'm drinking it right now.
So there was some alcohol ingested. I got that impression because PCA's What's Up Everybody, when he did the video for MLB and Cubs social media, may have indicated that he might have had one or two.
Yeah. Well, the combination of champagne and Budweiser is it's an interesting one. You don't usually mix that around.
It's a lot of bubbles.
Beer before liquor, never sicker, or something like that.
Liquor
I don't know. Do
beer,
we
never
champagne?
Fear. I don't think it matters
liquor.
Anymore. I
yeah,
don't know.
Champagne's never even in that saying. That's the problem.
Yeah, I tried. You know what I mean? That's my thing. Sometimes I try just a little bit too hard. Ian, what were you guys thinking on the field when that ninth inning comes around? And we know how successful Brad Keller has been this year, but he gives up the home run to Jackson Merrill, and then things start to get messy out there. What is the feeling in such what felt like a very fragile moment in that game?
Yeah, I think the home run was nothing. I think, you know, when he's in there competing in the zone and the guy gets him, that's part of it, especially pitching with a 3-run lead. You know, just want him to be aggressive and go after guys. And then, you know, the walks, a couple of hit by pitches there, and a little bit scattered. I think, you know, he had done such a great job in the first game. Then you're asking him to go two innings with a little bit of length, and he was getting up around 30 pitches, which is it's a lot to ask, especially the up down of the emotions. You know, going out for the eighth and then. The motions kind of regulating and then come back out for the ninth. So I thought Counts did a great job, and I thought Carson Kelly did a great job of talking multiple bullpen guys, talking to those guys and getting them right, and, you know, being able to go to Kit there. I think that was one of the advantages of doing the opener the day before, just a little bit of extra rest. I know it's not a ton, but the difference between going out and throwing the first inning and then being able to watch the game versus being in the bullpen waiting for the phone to ring for all that time, it's just a little bit different. So, yeah, for Kit to have a little bit of extra rest and be able to go out and get the last couple outs was great.
I love the Swiss Army knife of it all. And looking at that game last night and the energy and the electricity, how would you describe it and compare it to what you've seen in previous games at Wrigley?
Yeah, I mean, that's as loud and as electric of a 3 days as I think I've seen. You know, we had some great ones in 17. And, you know, the wild card game in 18 kind of, it was tight the whole way, and it was long, and it was into extras. But I think that's the loudest atmosphere, you know, I've been lucky enough to see here. And just from some of the people that were here, you know, some of the staff were talking about kind of the loudest since those 15, 16 runs. So it was electric. It was electric the whole time, and I can't wait for more playoff baseball at Wrigley.
Yeah, I know, Ian. I've asked you this a couple times because I feel like it's important, and it's a rule in our business, and I hate it. You know, they say don't ask how does it feel, but for you, especially at this point in your career, knowing the gap that the Cubs had even from 2020, and you know, I think about that one game wild card loss to the Rockies in 18, to be able to have this opportunity of the 3-game series at home and to close it out in front of your home fans like you wanted. You said how important that was to you. How does this feel for you specifically to be able to be advancing in the playoffs?
Yeah, and it's special. I think, you know, we wanted to play home games at Wrigley for this fan base, and we achieved that. You know, I've been lucky to play in the postseason for this organization, but haven't clinched anything at Wrigley. You know, even the 17 division, 20 division, 17 DS, all of that was on the road. And so I haven't got to celebrate in front of these fans and see that and kind of experience that. And so it was just a super special moment to be able to see live, like, that fan reaction and see the stadium erupting, see all the W flags. And then after, to be able to go back out onto the field, you know, kind of after we celebrated, to see family, to see friends, and be able to do that at Wrigley, on Wrigley. Just really, you know, can't put it into words how much that means. And I think the most exciting part of it is, you know, we get to keep doing it at Wrigley, and that's awesome.
Our segment with Ian is brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
All right, let's get serious here, Ian, because there is actually a ball game tomorrow, which is just wild. There's not enough time to celebrate what just went down, and you guys do deserve to celebrate it, but it's looking like Freddie Peralta will be the guy on the mound for Milwaukee tomorrow, which and he is. We talk about a guy who has sustained amongst all those great pitchers that the Brewers have had through the years when Corbin Burns was there, and I know Brandon Woodruff is iffy for the series. Freddie has always been there, a Cy Young contender. How do you feel about this series, the craziness of it being Cubs Brewers and going up against Freddie Peralta tomorrow?
I mean, yeah, it's going to be a fun series. I think it's going to be a pretty electric atmosphere in both places. But, you know, Freddie's been great for a long time. He's been really, really good. He continues to, you know, pitch at an ace level. And that's why they've been such a good team. You know, they do have good staff. They've done great work out of the bullpen. And so, you know, we just faced a really good staff in San Diego. Their starters were really, really good. And their bullpen did a great job. The 5-game series is a little bit different than the 3-game series in that sense of how long starters have to go and how much bullpen usage there is. But I think the one thing that's a little bit different about this one is just we've played them quite a bit, and we've played them more recently, and we hadn't played the Padres since April. And so, you know, having a little bit more experience with their bullpen and their team and a little bit more knowledge of their pitchers, I think, will help us offensively.
Yeah, just from having talked to you guys in the past, back when I was doing pre and post, like, players will always say, I think you said it, like, there's a sense of comfort playing in those ballparks. It's going to be rowdy and crazy, but when you guys are in St. Louis or Cincinnati or, in this case, Milwaukee, there's a sense of comfort. But I also wanted to ask you, Ian, too, you're grinding out good at bats. You had a hit yesterday. Do you feel like you're ready to kind of break out? Is it your turn, sir, to get some of the big the big hits in this series?
Hey, however it happens, however we can figure out a way to push more runs than they do. But the Padres, you know, there are a couple of tough matchups for me with Pivetta and Cease. That I haven't historically hit those guys very well. A little bit of a tough pitch mix, but. Yeah, I felt like the at bats were good. I was getting deep in counts, wasn't quite getting the results that I wanted. But that's part of it. You know, you're going to go through a couple day stretches, and it just gets magnified in the playoffs because it's 2 or 3 days. You know, that was 2 tough days, and it gets magnified.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, you know, my work's been really good, and you do everything you can to help. You know, maybe lay down a bunt like I did yesterday, whatever you can to help try to create runs. And that's the fun part of the playoffs is if you have a bad day and you win the game, who cares?
I'm really curious, as we're joined by Ian Happ here on Raheemy Harrison Grody. Ian, what's your feelings on rest versus rust? Because you are coming off of such an emotional high, and you get a day to kind of reset but go right back at it. Meanwhile, the Brewers have been sitting around for almost a week.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the playoff atmosphere and the first couple times you do it, you know, there is, it's different, you know, it's different. And so feeling that and getting a chance to feel that, getting a chance to go through those moments, I think helps. You know, we're going to be up there tonight. We'll have a little workout. You know, that's part of, you know, staying fresh and continue to do it. Baseball is kind of an everyday sport, and I think that we have guys that are accustomed to doing that. So I feel like our guys are in a good spot for sure.
Ian, I saw the good deed. It got gossiped about in the bleachers. The last regular season game, you threw a ball up there and said thanks to the fans, and there was 100 wrapped in it for some drinks. What was your thought behind that, and did you find out what the crew in the bleachers got?
I'm sure it was beers, but yeah, it's the last 3 years I've done that for those guys. I think just their commitment to being out there every day. You know, there's a group of those guys that are out there 81 games. You know, it's incredible. And so just a little way for me to say thank you for their support and loyalty and consistency. And so I appreciate them, and If I can show that anyway, I will.
Well, and I know you probably don't care if it gets publicized, but that ended up being posted by Relish Brand. I know they posted it on Instagram, and it did get a little bit of play in the stands. It's nice that we were able to ask you about that too on a day like this. But I know that's not necessarily the reason you do it.
Yeah, no, I do it because, you know, they've supported me through ups and downs and been out there every single day, and to have a group of fans and a group of individuals that no matter what, just unwavering support, you know, from when things were a little bit not so good here, when we were losing, when I was struggling, you know, they were always out there and always supportive and always positive. And so I've always just really, really appreciated that about kind of that group that sits behind me every day.
Ian, 13 hits yesterday for your group as a team, four guys with multiple hits. Do you feel like something is breaking out? You mentioned the fact that the Padres are just a tough matchup for anybody when it comes to pitching, especially that bullpen.
Yeah, I think that's a credit to our hitters for getting all those hits, but it's a credit to their bullpen for how difficult it is to score against them. You know, we had a bunch of guys on base and we're only able to push three runs. And that's a credit to those arms that they have, because there are just so many strikeouts with that bullpen. They have electric stuff and they have the ability to do that. And a bunch of, we've got a few sinker guys who are good at getting ground balls. So some double plays in there too, but I think our guys just, you know, you get a couple of days of seeing the same guys and the ability to start swinging it like that. I know that just there's a little bit of confidence there from getting those hits and getting those playoff hits out of the way and kind of breaking the seal.
Yeah, Ian, there was some heavy duty controversy in the ninth inning with a certain Xander Bogaerts at the plate and the home plate umpire DJ Rayburn badly missing a call, a ball that was low. And I have to tell you what I thought in the moment. I was like, yeah, that's a bad call. But guess what? It's nice that for once one of these weird things didn't go against the Cubs. And you guys have had your fair share of games where the home plate ump was missing everything. What did you guys make of that moment and the Padres' angst in the moment? And then apparently, and I don't even know if you know about this, but they were going off on the umps as they were walking off the field at Wrigley after that game.
Yeah, I think it's an emotional that's an emotional moment. And I think that with your season on the line and in that situation, you know, tensions were definitely high. It's hard to see that from left field. And it's hard to see kind of the where it is exactly. And Karst did a good job of catching that ball.
Oh,
but
yeah.
That's kind of, you know, that's part of the game. And I think DJ back there did a great job pretty much that whole game. There's when you see, you know, he's seeing 300 pitches in that game.
Yeah.
There's going to be a couple missed ones. It's nice when it goes your way. And in that situation, to get that out was huge. And, obviously, the tensions is just like in that moment, that they're going to be a little bit elevated. I thought the umpires did a good job of handling that situation. I thought they did a good job handling the whole series. Just, you don't ever want somebody to get thrown out in the playoff game. And they did a really good job of just being able to calm it down and not take anything too far.
Ian, there's a story that also came out on Monday in The Athletic, thanks to Patrick Mooney, talking about the workflow that you discussed and Nico discussed with Craig Counsell when it came to trying to improve that. How did you see that take place, and what exactly changed from the conversation you had?
Can you elaborate a little bit more on workflow?
Yeah, it was your workspace workflow in the dugout.
Oh, kind of the dugout change?
Yes.
Yeah, that was something that we had been talking about for a little while. Just when the new dugout was installed, and I think I'm the only guy that was able to experience the old dugout. In 17 was the last year of the old dugout. It was just really tiny, and there was nowhere to go. So I don't know, you guys remember the pitchers, some of the starting pitchers would sit up on like coolers at the top there. And it was just this really intimate setting. It was a lot closer to home plate as well, the old dugout. And so you felt like you were right on top of the hitter. Everybody had to be together and tight knit and talking in the dugout. There's a couple stadiums that are like that, in the big leagues. You know, the Coliseum was one in Oakland that was really tight. And San Diego's a little bit like that too on the visiting side. And I just felt like it kept the group really close during the game, and kept everybody on top of each other, kept everybody communicating. Now we have this massive dugout that's really nice, but it would kind of separate guys. There was times where there would be a group of guys on one set of benches kind of down the third baseline. And then we had this bench kind of closer to the bat rack and closer to the hitter. But if you were sitting down below, you couldn't see the game. And so, you know, on cold days, guys would be down there trying to get warm, but you couldn't see what was happening. And so it was kind of, how can we make this a more cohesive environment? How can we make it so that you can interact, so that you can have a little bit more freedom to walk around in there? And so we talked to counts about it. We talked and the engineers and everybody actually worked together on this from front office to Crane, and were able to kind of come up with this plan of getting rid of that bench that was closer, having a stairs where everybody, and now you can walk through the dugout a lot easier, but you can also see the game if you're sitting down below, you know, looking at the pitcher or previous at bat. I think it makes that space a lot more functional.
Man, that's a good use of design solution. That's really cool. That article, in case you're interested, also listeners, obviously, just came out in The Athletic earlier this week. Ian, thank you so much. Congratulations on the Wild Card Series win. We look forward to the NLDS.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks, Ian.
That's Ian Happ. I'm sure he is continuing to enjoy his Connect Roasters coffee. You can get it at Steingold and other establishments. And Ian, kind enough to join us via the Circuit Resort and Casino Hotline. And this segment is brought to you by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS. This is a huge weekend for Wagertainment. As we mentioned, the baseball playoffs, a big part of it. No better person to help us out than Joe Ostrowski. Joe O, next on 670 The Score.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Oh, hey, love your shoes. If you're hearing this, this is your sign to try those on. Trust us, you can totally pull them off. In fact, try on every shoe here if you want. We won't stop you. In our house, you've got unlimited freedom to play. And hey, fall is the perfect season to do, wear, be whatever you want. And with tons of shoes that get you at prices that get your budget, we'll give you something to brag about. So go ahead, try them on. Let us surprise you.
Now Bush drives one in the air, deep right field. This ball's got a chance. Gone!
Michael Bush, one of the hottest hitters on the planet, going into this playoff, comes up big in game three.
Cubs lead 3-0. Michael Bush with a drive over the right center field fence. It cleared the 368 marker and landed about two or three rows back. And the Cubs now lead by 3.
Do you think this crowd was ready for a blast from someone in a blue uniform?
Woo!
Woo! Indeed! Woo-hoo. What a delight to talk to our guy, Ron Coomer. And always just one of God's great men joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Ron, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning. Maybe a little less coffee I should have gone with before the game yesterday.
It was great. That was great.
David, thank you for all the help yesterday. Awesome job, you know, getting thrown in there in a playoff game, and things went really well. So all's fun, and ready to go to Milwaukee.
Had a lot of fun, Coom. You carried me through the fifth and throughout the night, and it was a lot of intensity. A lot of things that you were waiting to see how the Cubs would handle this moment. And we saw the bullpen used in the way that Craig Counsell maybe designed it to be used all along. I want to start with PCA, though. I thought it was really interesting because you have been on what he hasn't been doing and why he has struggled to the extent that he has. And last night, I think that it didn't seem really that big of a deal at the time. But you identified when Yu Darvish made a non-competitive first pitch to PCA in the first at bat, and it was like a 58-foot curveball, and it bounced in the dirt. You said that PCA relaxed after that. He had three hits after that. I don't know if it's cause and effect, but could you explain and remind our listeners why you think that was such an important pitch and what it meant to PCA's night?
Well, cause and effect to me, David, with that situation was Eat is up there, and he's, you know, the adrenaline rush of playing at a young age and having the season he had or the period of time that he had where, you know, there were MVP chants around baseball because of him and people talking. You want to continue that thing going. Well, the league kind of flipped the script on him and said, we're not throwing you strikes now. So he's had his struggles. And he's continuing to try to go up there and be aggressive swinging. Well, the league is not allowing him to swing at strikes. They are just not going to throw him strikes. And I thought it was big that Darvish spun that breaking ball in the dirt well out of the zone. It was either a curveball or a changeup, but well out of the zone. To where as soon as you saw it, you knew it's not even close. And what that did is it allows Pete to actually see a pitch come in, track it to home plate or to the dirt, not think of swinging, and then be able to take a step out and take a breath and slow the at-bat down. And now all of a sudden you've seen one pitch already, and it's not a strike, and it's well out of the zone. Now all of a sudden you get to be a baseball player again. The adrenaline rush can subside a little bit, and you can actually let the talent that you have come out in your performance. And I thought yesterday, finally, he got to some 3-1 counts. He got to 2-0 counts. He forced because of his teammates around him getting on base and then him taking a few pitches. He got to advantageous counts. His swing is great. It's the at-bat of what he's swinging at is not great, and the league is doing that, and he gets strikes. And he got three hits.
Yeah, it when he was able to get into those 3-2 counts, you knew he was going to get strikes, and that kind of made it so much easier on him, Ron. It felt like up to that point, he was aiding the Padres getting him out in the first couple games.
Yeah, there's a difference, Mike, when you look at hitters. It's for me. I shouldn't say for everybody, but for me, when I look at hitters, there's multiple ways you end up getting out and go into these slumps. One is mechanics of your swing. We've talked about different guys' mechanics through this year. And I've just said, until this changes, the result's not going to change. The mechanics of the swing are not right for some guys. Then there are other guys, I say, the mechanics of the swing are fine, but you're not allowing the game that's being played to work in your favor. You're too aggressive and the league isn't throwing you strikes. And that's in Pete's case. And he's a young 23-year-old player wanting to hit from the on-deck circle. I get it. But you have to be able to pay attention to what the league has done after he had an MVP caliber first half. They were not going to let him swing at strikes. And then San Diego, to put the icing on the cake, they had three people here over the last 2 weeks watching us. I know all three of them very well. I've been joking with them all week, you know, because we're sitting in a dining room. I knew that there's no chance they're going to throw him strikes. Well, you know what? they got forced to have to do that in game three because of the situation and then that first pitch from Darvish. The situation dictated they had to throw him strikes. Each swing is outstanding. It was, you know, what he's swinging at was making it difficult to hit.
Coombe, don't want to overstate this or get too caught up in the moment, but when you see the Padres and them going home, I look at that matchup as a team that was built for the postseason the Cubs have now eliminated. And I do wonder, and I'm curious what your opinion is on this, are the Brewers a better matchup for the Cubs than the Padres seemed?
I think if you look on paper, maybe you could make a case for that. I don't know. I look at the Brewers and I look at how they play. And, you know, we had the season series by one game, I think 7-7. I forget what it is, but I think by one game. The thing you got to always remember about Milwaukee is they know how to win. So you can take all of this, you know, who's matched up with what. Milwaukee figured out how to win a long time ago. They've been in the playoffs and they're, you know, they've been doing it and they've been doing it and they've been doing it. So you may not know the name on the back of the jersey all the time, but, and they've got some of those too, some star players, but they know how to win and they know how to play winning baseball. And I think that's what it's about in October. And we did a little bit of that yesterday. We need to do a lot more of that in this next series.
You know, Ron, we did talk a little bit about DJ Raiborn calling an out on Xander Bogaerts on a pitch that seemed clearly to be a ball, and that's, you know, it was a needed out. It was good for the Cubs that it happened.
Huge play.
And then you get a couple of hit batsmen, and again, I don't think it would have gotten to that point. I think, let's say he walked after the first hit batsman, I think that Brad Keller would have been taken out of the game. I don't think he would have gotten the opportunity to load the bases there. But nonetheless, that was, you know, as you say, just a big moment in the game. And listen, you know, if the Cubs had somehow found a way to get that game tied up or to lose that game, That would have been bad for the Cubs. That would have been a choke job because they had the game won and they got out of it. But man, that was, when you saw them yelling and you saw their reaction, you can't really blame them. And I know that that won't be the case next year when they get to the ABS system. But I'm just wondering, was that as bad from your perspective as it looked on television?
Yeah. I don't disagree. There were, you know, I thought Raiburn did actually a decent job. I don't know how he rated. I try not to look at that the next day.
Right.
Specifically, just for my own mental health, because I don't want to get too involved in being too hard on the umpires.
Yes.
The player in me comes out on the broadcast. You guys hear it, but I don't want that to be the crutch of my broadcast of getting on the umpires all the time. They got a really hard job. That was a big play. There's no doubt. We had a couple plays in that series and a couple pitches that went way against the Cubs. I remember earlier in the series, a big at bat for Ian, and he, you know, it was a high fastball and he got called on a strike that wasn't close. That would have flipped the whole inning around. It didn't. That last play, you know, there are times in a ball game where when you make a mistake like that, it's costly for the other team. There's just no way of getting around that. I missing a pitch in the second inning on a, you know, 0-1 pitch and then missing one for strike three in the ninth, you know, in a close ball, it's just different. I'll say two things about that. I thought Raiburn did a good job by not ejecting Bogaerts and not doing anything to the manager who was coming out to save him, even though Schultz pointed back at him and yelled, but he just kept his head straight forward. And good for Raiburn of being, you know, understanding the situation and, you know, the whole, just the situation. He did a good job. He didn't call the right pitch. He didn't kick those guys out of the game. But if I'm Bogaerts, I'd have done the same thing.
Yep.
So, Coombe, I
same
think
thing. Swake, yeah.
We are we saw the Craig Counsell that we expected in terms of managing the bullpen and pushing the right buttons and going, you know, deep into his relief corps because of the need and this, you know, how specific he has each job defined. I was a little surprised that he didn't go into his bench much. And I was also maybe a little surprised that he didn't shake up his lineup a little. Maybe I shouldn't have been. But do you think that changes against the Brewers? Do you feel like there was an opportunity last night I felt like Matt Shaw could have been pinch hit for with Ballesteros at a time when I don't think that it would have, you know, you would have been missing much, and Matt Shaw did not look great at the plate. How should we expect Craig Counsell to manage this roster in the Brewer series, and will it be markedly different?
I don't think you're going to see much difference. My question to you, David, would be this. The Cubs had the lead. Once you have the lead in a game like this that we were playing yesterday, where every pitch and every out is vital, you want your best defensive team out there. Matt Shaw gives us the best defensive team at third base. So that's why he didn't use Ballesteros as the game progressed. Now, if the script was flipped like it was in game two, Ballesteros came in the game and hit. So that's the thing that's going to change it. If the Cubs need offense and they're behind, you're going to see them unload the bench, in particular Ballesteros, if he gets a right-handed pitcher on the bump where he can do a little damage. But if the Cubs are ahead, you want your best defensive club out there, and that's going to be Matt. I would think Counts has given some thought to some lineup change a little bit, and maybe injecting another guy maybe in the starting lineup. And it could be Matt. It could be, you know, that sits a game or so if Counts thinks the matchup and he can get some offense out there that might help. That could be the case. I don't know that for a fact, and I have not asked Counts at all, but you can see Matty's struggling. There's no doubt.
Ron Coomer on the Score is sponsored by Huntington, home of early pay. More at Huntington.com/yourmoney. And Ron, I thought Mike Schilt got it right when he said after the game that Dansby Swanson was phenomenal and killed them with his defense. And I really felt that the Cubs' defense was excellent in all three games. Swanson in particular was making play after play. He was making everything look so easy. Even the one where he jumped up and knocked the ball down and threw out a Rise who had stopped running. Wow, what's that about? I mean, Dansby Swanson had a hell of a series.
Yeah, he got some hits. If you remember in game one, he got a couple hits and making great plays. There was a play he made in the hole in yesterday's game where Matt Shaw backed off on the ball. And I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I think Dansby called it, you know, on the second hop quickly. I don't know if that's the case or Matt just backed off, which was a good play by Matt. But for Dansby to make that play, that was like, you know, that's 10 out of 10 for difficulty for a shortstop. To go that far to your right and have to round the ball and then throw as your momentum is going basically towards the on-deck circle for the Cubs, you know, and throw across your body. And he threw a strike where Bushy could stretch and get to the ball, and they got him by a step. That's just a great play. You know, and sometimes you can talk about that in a broadcast. Sometimes I can't, but I just went, now that is a big league shortstop play in a big situation to end the inning. That was like, oh, my gosh, that's big time.
Coom, all's well that ends well, but in real time, we discussed the decision to remove Jameson Taillon after four innings. There were 12 out. I wondered if he would try to go for 15 to push back the bullpen part of the program until you had to go to the bullpen. He did not do that. It worked out, but I wonder how much of that decision was influenced by the previous day's decision to stick with Shota Imanaga and to go with your starter maybe one batter too long, and what he saw in Taillon, because I thought up to that point, through four, Taillon was very sharp, and you could have justified sending him back out there in the fifth.
You definitely could have justified it. J-Mo, we haven't talked about him really, but I think you talk about a veteran pitcher pitching like a veteran and going out there and being like, I got this. Don't worry about it, boys. Watch this. Fastball, changeup. Fastball, curveball. And he was dumping in breaking pitch and changeup after changeup. But here was the thing. Whether it had influence from the game before or not, I'm not sure. But we do know this. When San Diego, and I talked with the scouts about this too the last few days from other teams, we were discussing. When you put together a lineup and you have at the bottom of the lineup or that 6-7-8 spot of three lefties in a row, that pocket of lefties, instantly that triggers Tommy Hotovy and Counts to go, okay, my lefties, Theobar, Pomerantz, Rogers, okay, guys, as you see this game progressing and we get to the middle of the game, when you see that pocket coming up, you guys, someone understand you're getting a call. We are going to go to you. That's where you're going to make your money. That's what's going to happen. And that's exactly what the case was. And I think because Counts got burned maybe in game two by, you know, not going with what he pregame did, you know, what he kind of determined he was going to do because he saw Scioto pitching well for him, he went right to what he was locked in on doing, and I thought it was the right move. I really did. You didn't give – the lefties got through that pocket of left-handed hitters, and Theobar did his job, and you didn't give any momentum back or any feel of – any good feel for the offense for San Diego. I thought it was great move, the right move, and it worked.
Ron, thanks a ton for getting up with us. Just quickly on the way out, who would you start tomorrow?
I would start Matthew Boyd.
Okay. Beautiful.
Great stuff, Coop. I'm with you.
Tomorrow, so yesterday he got up in the pen in the ninth. That's basically like his side day, Mike. Use that as his side day. A little more adrenaline for a side day than normal, but that's what you use it. And I would pitch Matthew in game one.
Great stuff. Thanks a ton, Ron.
Thanks, Coom.
Boys, thank you. Have a great weekend or a great rest of the week, and I'm sure we're going to talk soon.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know it. We'll be all over you.
Love it.
That's our guy, Ron Coomer.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Oh, hey, love your shoes. If you're hearing this, this is your sign to try those on. Trust us, you can totally pull them off. In fact, try on every shoe here if you want. We won't stop you. In our house, you've got unlimited freedom to play. And hey, fall is the perfect season to do, wear, be whatever you want. And with tons of shoes that get you at prices that get your budget, we'll give you something to brag about. So go ahead, try them on. Let us surprise you.
We will rally around Kurt Warner.
Kurt Warner.
You're a big horse, and you must be ridden every Monday night.
Two-time NFL MVP.
They talk about this, the greatest show on turf, maybe the best offense ever in football.
Super Bowl champion.
Warner to throw. Going deep downfield, adjusting for it is Isaac Bruce. Touchdown, 73 yards.
Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Not just the NFL Hall of Fame. And I wear that as a badge of honor, because without pro football, in all its forms and fashions, I'm not here to be.
Radio analyst for Westwood One Sports.
Early 60s, you were probably calling games then. You know what? I was calling in my bedroom in Green Bay.
Okay, there you go.
I was 12 years old.
That's how you got your start. 10 o'clock on a Monday night, they're saying, Kevin, go to sleep. Go to sleep.
That's what they do. No, they knock on the door and said, okay,
this is my career. Don't crush my dream. That's how it all started, people.
NFL Network analyst.
The first ever regular season game in Ireland.
I want to see the gritty in Irish, okay? What he said he's got
in Irish.
Yeah, he said he's
gritty
got
in Irish.
Irish gritty coming up.
All right. I want to see the gritty in Irish.
In Irish.
Good to know. Listen.
Kurt Warner with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Our second with Kurt Warner is sponsored by Plumbers 911. Plumbing emergency. Call the plumbing professionals, available 24/7 at 1-833-PLUM-911. It's also brought to you by Great Clips. It's going to be great. Kurt, thanks for joining us here on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. We are actually live at Stadium Swim at Circa. It's pretty awesome. And Bears fans left Las Vegas very happy with a win. The game wasn't pretty, but it was a win. And I know we talked a little bit about this last week, that you can make more corrections after a win. How did you feel like Caleb played, and where is there still room for him to grow?
I mean, I think it was a win. You know, the more I watched it, the more I'm thinking to myself, well, how did they get out of there with a win? But obviously they got a little help from the defensive side, or some mistakes by Geno on that side. But, you know, in this league, they're all tough. And the bottom line is finding ways to win. And they found a way to win on the road, which was great. You know, I think Caleb continues to do a nice job. I mean, it's not great. It's not fully there yet. But I mean, I thought he made a number of plays again, a number of good plays inside the pocket. I thought a couple things that stood out was that, you know, he handled pressure, really well. Sometimes when, you know, there were some hot situations and he saw it and got the ball out of his hands, very, very quickly. So, I mean, I like the fact that, you know, you're not watching it and you're going, oh, he's reverting back to some things you saw before. That every week he's fighting that same battle and doing some really good things. And I think growing within the offense and growing as a quarterback, you know, patient quarterback that can play inside the pocket and go through some reads and stuff. You know, I think there's always room for improvement, you know, missing some throws and some, you know, some reads at times, maybe getting through it too fast or not seeing something that's right in front of him. But again, I mean, I think, you know, through four games, you have to be happy with the growth that he's shown and the comfort level that he seems to feel at this point in this offense. And I think it's only going to get better.
Kurt, you've really helped us kind of dial in how we can look at a game from Caleb, because there are a bunch of negative plays that we could reference and talk through. And you mentioned a couple things, and we had just talked about a couple. But there's also a bunch of positives, and each play is its own animal, right? And hopefully you see progress overall. I did see him against a full-on blitz hit Zacchaeus a couple of times on what seemed like a hot read and stay in. How about the Rome touchdown? The touchdown to Rome Odunze on 3rd and 12, when it looked like he knew he was going to get hit, maybe, and stood in there strong, waited long enough, and completed that ball. That was exciting to see.
Yeah, I mean, you know, those are the big-time throws that you know are in there. But I love the timing of it. I love the fact that he, you know, he let that thing go. And I was trying to watch the concept, and I'm not even really sure what the concept was, because they had kind of what I call a pepper post on the other side, where it's not a normal post that goes, you know, to the pylon, or I mean to the goalpost, but it goes to the back pylon on the other side. So normally you don't have anything, you know, running high on that side. So I don't know if that was an in. It looked kind of like a skinny post, but regardless, he let that thing go way early. Saw the window, like you said, with the pressure coming, and put a perfect throw on Rome for the touchdown. And, you know, obviously those things excite you, not just because it's a great throw, but just the anticipation and the ability to let that go and know what he was looking at. So we could let that go early and get it out there, whether it would be to take a sack or the window to close. You know, those are things that you really love to see, you know, within the offense, is that, hey, he's got some comfort level with some things where maybe we're starting to see some other things come out that we haven't really seen the last couple years, like that anticipation. And, you know, because you guys have watched a lot of football with a lot of quarterbacks, not everybody has that. Not everybody has the ability to kind of see ahead and let things go early, you know, when playing the game. And so that one definitely had anticipation. You know, so maybe that's a glimpse of something that's inside of Caleb that, you know, we'll just start seeing down the road.
Ben was really honest about a moment towards the end where he says to Caleb, like, you were built for this. This is what you do. And it clearly meant something to Caleb as well. By the time that you're winning Super Bowls, like, you're a fully grown quarterback, Kurt, but do you remember anything from really early in your career where during a game, a coach showed real true belief in you getting the job done, and not just, it doesn't feel like platitudes, it feels like real support and can help breed some confidence?
Yeah, I mean, I would say less of a coach in a situation, but a player. I remember that first year in 99 when I took over, and obviously we had great talent on the team, and I think everybody kind of looked at it when I first took over as kind of as, okay, you know, we'll kind of carry him and he'll just be kind of a cog in the wheel. And, you know, we all know as the quarterback, at some point you've got to kind of take over and become the guy if a team's really going to be good and an offense is going to be really good. And so we were playing against Detroit. It ended up being the first loss that we had on the season. But we were, you know, down late, and it was kind of the first time, because all the games up to that point, we had kind of blown out our opponent. It was the first time that, you know, I was in a situation where I had to bring our team back and make a drive, and was able to drive the team down and put us in the end zone. And just remember Marshall coming over to me, and, you know, he actually just kind of pointed to his heart and just kind of, you know, made a point of saying, hey, you know, we all saw that. Like, this is – that was your moment to kind of earn the respect of your guys and for us to see what you're all about, and kind of passing the torch going, okay, now it's your team. So that was kind of my moment, even though we ended up losing that game, you know, Troy came back and scored a touchdown to win. But that was kind of my moment where, you know, I felt like I had the full support of the team and they understood who I was. And now it was about following me, you know, moving forward. And so I think we all need that as a player, whether that's coming from a coach or coming from your teammates, to kind of say, hey, we see you, you know, we understand what you're all about. Now take us to where we want to go.
You know, Kurt, after the game, as I'm watching him in postgame, and we've watched him so much over this year and a quarter or whatever it is, he seems so proud and pumped and like comfortable in the post game. Like, words come quicker and come easier, and some of the words are Ben's, some of the words are the head coaches.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I mean, this is a young guy. It's like, and he talked about Ben's calmness helping them at halftime. It's like, it seems like this coach is really trying to reach him, and maybe Caleb is open to it. Like, how important is it to be open to letting yourself be molded by somebody?
Yeah, I think it's really important to be vulnerable and to be coachable. You know, you come in as a young guy with high expectations and all the success that you had in college, and you're supposed to be the savior. And, you know, and again, I see it all the time, is that it's almost like they come in and they're supposed to know everything and they're supposed to get it, or they're supposed to at least pretend like they do. And so you see a lot of young guys that, you know, almost kind of like shake people off, and it's kind of like, nah, I'm good. You know, I got this, you know, and kind of that false bravado of, hey, you know, I don't want anybody to think I have a weakness, so I'm going to pretend like I have all the answers. And I think it's a big deal when guys are willing to humble themselves and go, you know what, I don't. And, you know, and you know, it kind of appears as if Caleb said, okay, mold me a little bit. And now maybe it was forced, you know, because sometimes I think you got to force it. I got seven kids. And there's lots of times where they want to shake mom and dad off. And you're like, nope, you know, we're not going to let you shake us off. You know, we're going to help you in this situation so you can learn and grow. And so I think there's a lot of young guys that come in and, you know, they try to pretend like they have it all. And at some point, somebody needs to kind of, you know, take them by, you know, whatever, and say, nope, we're going to do it this way. And it sure seemed like Ben did that. But at the same time, the player has to at some point be willing to kind of, you know, throw off that false bravado and go, you're right, I need this, I need help, I'm willing to listen, you know, shape me and mold me. And I, ironically, I just tweeted today that, you know, after having seven kids for so long, I've come to realize that one of the hardest things for me is when I want to help one of my kids and when I really feel like I have the ability to help them, but they don't want the help. And my wife, you know, recently saw a podcast or read a book, you know, called Let Them. And so she's constantly preaching that to me. Like, if they're not ready and they don't want it, you got to pull back and just let them do their thing. And, it, you know, eventually, you know, they're going to see that, you know, they do need help, or they're going to reach out for help or whatever that is. And so I feel like sometimes you got to just go, okay, I'm going to let them fail. I'm going to let them go down their path, because it doesn't matter how much I offer to help them. If they're not willing to listen to it or to hear it, they're not going to accept it. And I feel it's very much the same, you know, in this field. Like we've talked about it. I make myself available to a bunch of young quarterbacks and nobody ever calls. And it could be because they have other people and other things that can help them. But I think a lot of it is simply this, what I'm talking about. Like, I don't want anybody to know that I don't have the answers. So if I reach out to somebody and ask them for help, then it's going to show people that I don't know. And I look at it like, well, if you don't know, you better know, you better figure it out, or you're not going to be here for long. But I think that's a big part of it. And so sometimes you just got to step back and go, all right, I'm available, but I'm not going to keep pushing this and pushing this, because until you're ready, it's not going to work. And I feel like, you know, Caleb is at that stage where he's ready and he's been pushed and he's been, you know, molded a little bit. And then you talk about the confidence that he seems to be talking with and the freedom. I think now it's kind of like, oh my gosh, I'm getting help and it's working. Like, I'm growing and I'm getting better and this feels good. You know, and instead of trying to pretend like I have all the answers, now I'm getting the answers. And now you put that with my talent, and this is what's showing up on a week-to-week basis, man, that is a freeing thing. And that allows him, I think, to be so much more comfortable in his own skin. Instead of trying to be something that maybe he's not completely, now this is allowing him to be himself and to be free. And I think you hear that when he talks. It's not as measured. It's just kind of like, hey, now I can just speak my mind. Now I can just be me. And you love how that, you know, shows up on Sundays.
I love hearing you talk about parenting. And while you're talking about that, I ran across an interview with Mike Shinoda, who's the lead singer of Linkin Park. And he was talking about how he's working with his daughter and his daughter's playing guitar. And he's like, well, you know, you might want to try this. And the daughter goes, "I get out of here." And then his wife shows the daughter a Linkin Park concert. And the daughter goes, "Who's that?" And the mom goes, "That's your dad in front of 80,000 people. He kind of knows something about performing and getting you ready to perform."
Hey, man, my boy wants to hear nothing about singing from me. I sing, Kurt, and my boy's a real good young musician. He wants nothing. He wasn't. We think you're on it.
We think you're totally on it.
We think you're totally on it.
It's the old Joe Madden axiom. When the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's a moment in the postgame where Caleb brought up his own body language, how it was bad in years past or last year. And he said his biggest growth is keeping composure for his guys. Ben brought up the body language in August. And now here's Caleb talking about it comfortably. Like, oh, yeah, I've been working on that. And I think that's been some growth. It's just like that honesty. One question about what Caleb – a lot of the short throws, he seems to fire without touch sometimes. Like, there was an early one, the first three and out, Lawrence, to DeAndre Swift. He's on the move, and he rifles it towards Swift's head, and he couldn't catch it. Just a little touch. Like, how do you teach that? How do you teach that to a young quarterback?
Well, I mean, you know, I think a lot of it is just teaching guys how to throw a football and the ability to engage your body to make certain throws. And again, I've worked with a lot of young quarterbacks, and very few of them, in my opinion, really understand how to throw a football. Like, they can grab a football and throw it really far or really hard or throw it, you know, well by most people's standards, but they've never been taught how to throw a football. And so I'm a believer that that power should come from your body and not your arm. And that means the arm should never be firing 100 miles an hour and throwing things hard. But when guys haven't learned how to throw, they throw with their arm. And I think that's one thing we see with Caleb a lot is that, you know, he increases the velocity of his arm when I want him to increase the velocity with his body and allow his arm to be a following piece. And I think that's why a lot of times you're seeing the ball being fired. And, you know, and so it's teaching that, you know, body engagement. You know, I know the play you're talking about, especially on that, like a little check down like that, to allow your, you know, arm. I almost say, like, on those short throws, I almost want to throw it like a dart. And so if you can envision throwing a dart, like, you're really only moving your wrist or kind of your forearm to throw it. You know, you're not winding up. Nobody winds up to throw a dart. And so it's the ability to create the power with your body and then just kind of flip the ball, you know, with your wrist and guide it with your hand instead of creating the power. And so that's all, you know, getting used to how to throw a football and working on those little elements. And then I think the other part, too, is a timing element. When you're late on anything, you know, or if you feel you're late, you throw it harder than you have to, or, you know, than you would if you're on time. So, you know, as you're speeding through your reads and stuff and you get to something, if you feel you're late, boom, ball's going to come out and you're going to throw it really hard because you're not sure what you're seeing. As you get more comfortable with that and as you start to understand the timing elements and you get there a little bit faster, that also gives you the ability mentally to go, oh, I don't have to throw this really hard. I'm not late on this throw, so I don't have to rip it in there. So I think that's just a couple elements that he's going to have to grow into. And the physical one is going to be one that he's going to have to work on a little bit more, you know, so he can take something off it. I mean, that was funny. I talked to my son, who's a quarterback, also about that all the time. And then, you know, I was watching some highlights of myself a couple weeks ago. And, you know, when I was watching some highlights, I'm like, man, I throw the ball soft. You know, that, you know, everything had a little arc on it. And, you know, the bottom line was that it always got where I wanted it to go, but it never looked hard. And that's how I always wanted to play, was I never wanted to feel like I had to throw it hard. I wanted to make it easy on my guys. And so it's that balance of being able to throw it what I call firm but soft. Firm enough that it always gets there, right? It never dies. It never hangs in the air, but soft enough that you can throw it up and over a guy, or you can make it easy on your guy to adjust and catch. And that's the fine art of playing quarterback. I mean, Drew Brees, you ever see him, you ever remember him throwing a ball hard? No. Impeccable timing, impeccable accuracy, and anticipation allows you to play that way. And I just think that's something that's got to come with time with Caleb.
Kurt, thanks for this. This was delightful. We will talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds good, guys.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this. Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.